Hey, this is Ty in San Francisco. So I think there's actually an even more banal explanation for the force majeure thing, and that it's just this really dumb inside joke in Hollywood. An actress becoming visibly pregnant is considered the worst thing that can happen to a production, even worse than somebody dying, because of the way the insurance writers on production insurance and the SAG-AFTRA contracts are written. There was a case in the 90s where Aaron Spelling fired an actress off of Melrose Place for getting pregnant, and she sued. She won like $7 million. So they can't release an actress from the contract. But then also, because of SAG-AFTRA contracts, especially A-listers, they have writers that if force majeure ever kicks in, they have the right but not the obligation to rejoin the project later, which completely ties the hands of the producers, and costs millions of dollars. So making a joke about it is probably kind of sexist, but that's Hollywood. They don't call it show friendship.
The enemy is here.
He's here. Where is he?
He'll be searching for the other two boxes, hiding until he has all three, until he's ready.
We have to be ready. You, me, the others.
Welcome back to Miscarriage of Justice, the podcast. Do we know that it's the podcast? Could there be another podcast solely dedicated to the masterwork that is Zack Snyder's Justice League?
Either way, it is the podcast.
It's the definitive podcast about Zack Snyder's Justice
League. Well, there will be a definitive collection that has all of our outtakes and bloopers, some behind the scenes. We will just completely fold and collapse into self-parody by releasing a longer cut of everything we've recorded.
We're going to fucking Snyder ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think is like, we've even said, you know, there's this kind of flowers for Algeron situation happening, and we're just, by the end, going to be like, man, this movie is great, and can you even imagine it without Martian Manhunter? I mean, what would have happened? It's crazy.
Well, I think I watched the movie last night for, I'm going to call it the final time. Mm-hmm. I watched part 6 and the entire epilogue last night, and I don't intend to watch it again. I've taken my notes, I've made my outline, and I think I'm done with it. And Nat, it is still not good. I regret to inform you.
Yeah, no, there's the only thing that would make this good. I can't even think of it. I wish I was the Flash and I could run fast enough to go back in time when I was sitting on my couch, and I would just be like, oh, instead of watching a 4-hour movie, you should just go to sleep or stick your hand in the boiling pasta water that you have on the stove.
Hit yourself in the temple repeatedly with a ball peen hammer for 4 hours and 2 minutes. Exactly. You would suffer less psychic damage that way.
Exactly. There are people who have been trepanated who are faring far better than you or I after watching this so many times. So
fucking hell.
You know, we've been a little light lately, and so I think now it's time for something darker.
Oh, for Christ's sake. I couldn't believe. So I'm sitting there minding my own business, watching part 6 last night, and the fucking part title comes up, and it's literally Something Darker. I hated it so much. I was so mad.
I forgot that's what it was called. And yeah, I don't. And I know what it refers to. It refers to Superman's new costume. But
it sure does.
Is it supposed to refer to anything? Like, I imagine it's supposed to be like a double entendre in that.
Oh, it absolutely is. Zach was so proud of himself when he came up with this.
But what is the other something darker? I mean, this is the point in which they win.
Yeah, it kind of, I mean, it gets dark, and then it gets triumphant, and every, you know, good triumphs over evil at the end. So it's only something darker for a minute, and then maybe that's counterbalanced by the something darker suit of Superman, which is intrinsically good. I don't know. It sucks ass, though.
I mean, terrible. On my planet, there's a saying that it's something darker just before the something dawn. So maybe that's...
Something darker this way comes.
Yeah. Also, on my home planet, no one knows how to read or write. So that's why we talk like that.
Nat had to return to his home planet.
And by home planet, I mean Boston, where I do.
I have to go now.
You know, and you know, just so people realize this, in Boston, you only learn about the Boston Tea Party, the Dropkick Murphys, and how to wear a Scally cap. You're actually not told any other. There's no other criteria in elementary school.
Well, I mean, I did grow up and was educated in New England, and I distinctly remember having advanced Dunkin' Donuts courses that I took.
Where, yeah, if you...
And duck pin bowling electives.
Yes, there are, you know, you can get AP credits for your culotta studies courses.
Oh, man, if I was on Twitter, I would absolutely put, like, culotta doctoral student in my Twitter bio. That's amazing. All right, we're doing that thing that we do. We're procrastinating talking about this fucking movie because it's just so brutal.
All right, time to rip
part six.
Rip the Band-Aid off.
Rip that fucker off. It is the final part, except for the epilogue, which is three different parts, which is the actual final part. But
it's kind of the final countdown.
It's really, yeah. It's the not penultimate, but it's the third penultimate part.
Try no, I'm not gonna.
No, not at all. Yeah, pen. It's not penta. It's just yeah, whatever. I don't fuck it. We got to get through this, man. Mm-hmm. Just stay focused.
Head down. Power through.
So it opens on the Kent farm, and Clark flies Lois to the Kent house, and Henry Cavill's standing there staring out the window, and he still has no shirt. And then Lois, like a bitch, has to go get him a flannel shirt so that he covers up his amazing V-shaped physique, which kind of sucked.
Yeah, let us have our buff man.
let my man cook.
Yeah.
Let him have his nips out.
Free? That's what... I wonder if we could get the release the Snyder Cut people to co-opt the free the nipple hashtag.
You know we could.
Yes, but we
just got to create a few thousand bot accounts and it'll
happen. We should use our powers for things of ambiguous ethical nature and not for evil. Right. I'm not saying what we're doing is good, but you know, it's not overtly evil. Yeah, so he's looking longingly out the window into the middle distance.
And he says of Martha, she loved it here, and so did I. He's coming back into his own. He's regaining his Superman consciousness.
Yeah, and that was kind of my question. So it's like, oh, all right. So we're to assume now that he's like totally fine. I mean, he was able, you know, he recognized Lois Lane. He's able to fly here. And is the putting on a shirt, you know, a symbol that he's returned to the living? Is that like his return to humanity? But my ultimate question is, and it barely matters because it would just make the movie longer. But he's not in any way, they're just going to give him a pass for destroying that monument and fighting the National Guard and like blowing up those cop cars and stuff. Because when we left off in Batman vs. Superman, the major thing undergirding the action of the film was he was more or less like on trial for being a superhuman person. And that obviously never got resolved because Lex Luthor set us up the bomb.
What you say?
Yeah. But so like, now I would imagine that someone's like, well, what's happening? Are they just being like, you know what? He was dead. Let's give him one. Is that how this resolves?
I mean, you're asking for there to be like ideological and plot coherence from one movie to the next. Like, what do you think this is?
I don't know. I foolishly, I think I slipped in the shower, and when I woke up, I was like, are these an internally cohesive series of films? But I've come to my senses. But yeah, that was like my takeaway. My first, I was like, but what about all the stuff that he did? So doesn't matter.
Well, it's very weird. The treatment of Superman throughout parts 5 and 6 is so odd to me. It's like the weirdest Deus Ex Machina ever. it's like obviously the whole movie, the whole second act, and then into the third act is all driving toward Superman being resurrected. And then he fights the resurrectors.
Mm-hmm.
Then he disappears. And then he shows up at the last possible second, like really as like the kind of cheapest Deus Ex Machina ever. It's just, there is no treatment of the very issue that you're raising here. There's no discussion of it. Batman has no recriminations. Well, Batman does have recriminations, but earlier he says, you know, I screwed up. I got to make this right. I got to get the team together for some reason. That is his amends that he makes to Superman. And they really belabor that throughout the 4-hour runtime of the movie.
Oh yeah. And that is the most tacked on. We've covered it before, but that Batman now loves Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing this for him. He owes it to him, et cetera, et cetera. That relationship's just not there. I'm not saying that
it isn't. It's not.
I'm not saying that you couldn't make it there. And by you, I mean you, Ian, specifically. Zack Snyder couldn't. We know that he couldn't do
right.
it. But if
he's incapable.
But if Warner Brothers drops the keys for this thing into your hands, I have confidence. But yeah, you could build that relationship in the future, but it's not there. He's just like, you know, I was trying to murder him. I basically think that, you know, he caused my world's 9/11, but our moms have the same name. And then I saw him fight a bad guy and get killed and therefore he's good. This is a reach for me, but I'm all about, you know, the reaches and the highfalutin things. Is Batman just like a support our troops type of guy? And because Superman died, that he's just inherently good, like that makes him a hero in his mind, even though
he's fucking Pat Tillman, dude.
Yeah, even though he was the person that like perpetrated, you know, the mass death in the beginning, is like, well, he died in battle, therefore he's good in my mind. I have to go put some bumper stickers on my car now. Like that's
it's very weird. Yeah, thank you for your service, Superman. All gave some gave all.
Yeah.
This is such an important point. I want to reiterate it. That relationship is not there because Superman is on the whole, on balance, Superman is not there.
Right.
He just shows up to save Victor and then to destroy Steppenwolf. But there's never any. Oh, there is one Batman Superman exchange. No. Who lifts him up out of the chasm? Is that Superman? No, I don't even think that is. I think that's like Aquaman or somebody else. But there is no...
I thought...
The relationship literally is not there.
I thought love lifted us up where we belong.
Love lifted us up where we belong. Where the eagles cry.
In that part.
It does. It does. But yeah, and obviously when Zach was cutting this... This is all to set up the nightmare that follows.
Yes.
Which is Bruce's dream. And in Bruce's dream, he has apparently allowed Lois to die. And that means Superman is hunting them like the dogs that they are.
Right. Yeah, it's... Although it would be tight if like Batman fell and there was a officer and a gentleman thing with... him and super or Bruce Wayne is just working. He's just doing the HR reports or whatever he does for the Wayne Corporation, and Superman comes in and picks him up, and then all the Wayne employees are cheering.
No, he does the other Richard Gere thing. He opens the ring box, and then Superman does like a weird or Batman does a weird horse laugh, and then he slams the ring box shut, like in Pretty Woman.
Yeah, but the relationships, I mean, you see, is it in the epilogue or is it in this part where like Batman buys his old house for him back and they are kind of like, it's assumed they're chums, right?
Yeah, yeah. So Zach does know that you need to set up conflicts and resolve them in order to have a movie, in order to create tension and drama. But he never, like, again, we've said this umpteen times, he never motivates anything. It's just like, this is so because I have said it is so. It's this ontological storytelling.
Right. Yeah, the relationship's not there. And as someone who's been in several emotionally absent relationships, I would know.
All right. So we briefly cut to the Batcave. Alfred is hanging out with the rest of the Super Friends, the Justice League. They all come down the elevator or whatever, and Alfred receives them. The only reason that I really wanted to make mention of this scene is because this is the first time that we see Aquaman with the trident, I think. It's certainly the only time we see him with the trident, the first time we see him with the trident on land. And it's just so shockingly, jarringly out of place that I wanted to call attention to how silly it looks.
He took up his mother's trident.
He was encouraged to do that earlier, and he's finally done it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, my thought was he had just come from a Maserati dealership,
right?
And when you get like a really high end Maserati, that they just give you a trident.
Yeah, you buy the supercar, the $450,000 version.
Yeah, because he was at the Batcave, and he's like, "You have so many Mercedes concept cars. I mean, I'm sure he has, you know, some like old Porsches and stuff." And he was like, "I need to get something." And just the Maserati deal, like, he's like, "Oh, this has a trident. I'm a trident kind of guy. Like, this is my car." It's like Mr. Burns thinking that the Count Chocula cereal was for him in the grocery store.
I suppose this one looks a bit like me.
Yes, he just comes in with a wooden chest full of doubloons and pays cash. So we find out, Diana's doing something, and we find out that they have learned that Steppenwolf is in a ghost city not far from Moscow, where there was a nuclear disaster, and we learned that Steppenwolf has harvested the radiation to build his base, his fortress.
And this is me being super nitpicky about the script, but harvesting the radiation, like,
you know, as you do.
I just imagine Steppenwolf talking to Darkseid as like an old timey Dust Bowl farmer. And he's like, "Radiation came in pretty lean this year. We had to bring the reactor down to, you know, the glue factory. And it's a damn shame that reactor's been with us since my father's time." Yeah, just like harvesting the radiation. Also, he can just say he can do whatever he wants. He's right. Portaling in and out of the world all the time. It all makes no sense. And as we will soon see, he didn't harvest the radiation enough because his fortress is very penetrable. Little known fact, as a crop, radiation is heavily subsidized. So there's some documentaries you should all see about that, and, you know, change your radiation intake.
Steppenwolf to Darkseid, he's like, "Yeah, we're coming in at like 3.6 Rontgens. Not great, not terrible." So this is just pure exposition, this scene. We are setting up, Zach and Terrio are setting up the particulars of the battle. And it's just, you know, characters reciting these plot points. The Unity's in there, we find out, and Victor steps up and he says, "I want to plug into the Unity one-on-one." It's like he wants to enter the octagon.
Yeah, he's going mano a mano with the Unity.
It's time!
And he literally says, "This is going back to our Officer and a Gentleman thing. Holy shit, closing the loop here." I think in Officer and a Gentleman, doesn't Richard Gere famously say, I got no place left to go?" Well, Victor says, "I got nothing left," referring to the death of his dad.
And like, right.
He's willing to sacrifice himself. He's willing to martyr himself the way his dad did. But I just could not believe that you put these words in the mouth of a character. "I got nothing left."
I think that
preposterous.
I think that was Snyder and Terrio giving us a little wink where they're like, "We have no ideas left."
Yeah. Victor is a stand-in for us.
Yes.
We have nothing left. We do not care.
Yeah, and I kind of, for like a split second, and then I thought about something else, but my thought was, he can plug in to the Unity. Like, the Unity's been described to us as basically just the force that levels the planet when these three boxes are brought together. But I guess it's actually kind of an operating system that eventually does that. And as we'll see, he has some time, you know, because the Unity is formed, but it takes a minute before, you know, the world gets completely leveled. And it's,
oh yeah, it takes like 13 minutes. We have four fucking ever until the Unity takes effect.
Yeah. Once having the Unity take effect is like when your computer has a new update for you. And it's just like, we can either do this at night when the computer's sleeping, or you have a, like, we're counting down 60 minutes until we just auto restart for you. And
the Unity may have to restart several times during the process.
Yeah. It's just like the Unity does not recognize the USB input that you have. Like, please eject and reconnect.
I just thought it was amazing. He said, I got nothing left. And then somebody, and again, it doesn't matter who, because all of these people, there is no characterization. I think this might be Batman. He says, I don't care how many demons he's fought in how many hells. He's never fought us.
Yes, he has. That's you fought him before. You fought him individually.
You literally fought him like 45 minutes ago in the runtime of this movie.
You met, I mean, by us, I guess that you never fought him with Superman on your side. And Are they confident? That's what's funny, is they're not even confident that Superman is going to join them. They're confident in the way that we are, that we know that's going to happen.
Right.
Right, because this is just... And the end is already determined, and all this is the least suspenseful movie maybe ever made. But yeah, that's the funny part, is that he has fought you, and he just beats you, and then he zoops away. So I don't know what... I don't know. I would be intimidated that he's fought a bunch of demons in various hells. Like, if you're fighting a guy with a 30-0 record, like, be scared. Like, that guy knows what's up. He's got experience. But yeah, again, that's just, all of these lines are, you know, epic lines for 14-year-old shut-ins. And so I'm sure it landed with the appropriate audience.
We cut to the Kent farm, and this is, I know we've already been at the Kent farm, but in this part, going from the dark, desaturated bat cave,
they're in a field of bat chives. That was the main thing they grew at the Kent farm.
Along the, next to the radiation crop.
Yes.
We go from the dark, desaturated bat cave to the light desaturated Kent farm. And I actually did appreciate this. This is how you build tension. We had a dynamic shift, a tonal shift. It goes from like very intense, talking about the fate of the world, talking and then cuts to the Kent farm. And this is super heavy-handed, obviously, but it's one of the only examples of it happening in the entire runtime of the film, is that we've actually had a tonal shift. And again, like, everything about it is too much. It's too bright. The music is too maudlin. But we do have this tender moment between Lois and Clark. And, you know, they're talking about their future. They're talking about his mom. And then Zach just, he just can't let well enough alone. He has to have a fucking butterfly land on Superman's hand while the symphonic music swells. It's just like, if you had just dialed it back by like 20%, it would have been cool and effective, but he's incapable of doing that. He's on 10 all the time.
The CGI butterfly just rips you out of the moment. It's so, as you said, it's so on the nose, and it doesn't too, like, Henry Cavill kind of like look at the butterfly, or like acknowledges the butterfly with his facial expression. And it's when was the last time a butterfly ever landed on somebody in a moment like that, when you weren't just like sticking your hand out and trying to get it to land on you? It's,
I don't know. Does it happen to Marlon Brando when he's dying in The Godfather?
Yes. And then when he gets murdered in Apocalypse Now, there's a butterfly rises out of the water with Sheen when he's
okay, and And then Martha Manhunter arrives. She pulls up in the pickup truck. And then doesn't it just cut? Like nothing happens? And then you never see Martha again for the entire movie?
No, she's there when they're going into the house.
Right. Yeah. Never mind. Yeah, when they move back in. You're right.
Although, okay, but it's possible that Martha is not there for the rest of the movie because maybe it's Martian Manhunter the whole time.
Exactly. I just thought it was weird that like Martha pulls up and then, I don't know, we cut back to the Batcave where Batman is talking about his premonition. He says, I had a dream, a premonition.
Yes.
And it's just like, man, again, it's just like my heart went out to Ben Affleck for having to contend with this horseshit dialogue.
My question was, how does he know it's a premonition?
Mm. Like, no, it's just, it could just be a dream. You're just, you know, this could be your id trying to express itself, Bruce.
Yeah, does he have the second sight now? Right, his super.
He's got the shinning.
You've got the shinning.
You mean shining.
Shh, you want to get sued?
Yeah, his superpower, as he said, is that he's rich. It's not that he has the vision. And yeah, that they have to, again, I know what they're doing. They're letting you know that this wasn't just a spooky visual, that this was a teaser for the third movie, the 4 hour and 21 minute movie. But yeah, it's just so silly that he has to be like, it's a premonition. And you're like, what? Just say you're worried. It's
yeah.
Batman doesn't have premonitions. He has gadgets.
Well, I mean, Zach has got to show us everything.
I know.
So, you know, it had to play out. He couldn't let us infer it. He couldn't, you know, it has to be stated. It has to be on screen. Then this is, all right, I have to stop acting and talking in superlatives because I was about to say this is the stupidest part of the movie, but it absolutely isn't. Here is another stupid part of this movie is that Cyborg fixes the troop transport.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever the fucking plane is. And like somebody, Batman or somebody says, you fixed it. And Cyborg says, it wanted to fly. Flying is its nature. To which Batman replies, yours too. Are you fucking kidding? Are you kidding me?
The funny part is, and this is my unnecessarily, you know, critical take on this.
No, this is absolutely necessary. It's essential.
But flying, one, the ship has no nature, right? It was just built by people to fly. So if
mm-hmm. I'm sure, built by people to not fly, apparently.
Yeah, right. the robot, his nature isn't flying.
Right.
Like, for me, there was kind of two interpretations of this. Like one, which is generous, and that what Batman means is his nature is to fly meaning to succeed, to like
to soar.
Yeah,
yes.
To overcome his challenges. But because this movie has been so painfully literal at every single moment, I assume they actually meant flying, like with his rocket boosters that he can barely control. And either way, to me, like the important takeaway of this is it's another just glimmer of the essentialism and objectivism that runs so deep in this movie. Because yes, we see, you know, Cyborg's a real sourpuss, but then he comes around later and he's, you know, kind of a central figure in saving all of them. And the reason he does that is because, as Batman said, it's in his nature.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, isn't it actually more interesting that that's not right? We're not predestined. We don't have just these like things that we are supposed to do, that you actually make a choice. You have some agency in the matter. You can assess, you know, an issue qualitatively and then choose to act. Not just like, well, you were born to do it, baby. And so get out there. And yeah, I said, I'm talking about it much longer than the scene is on camera, but I do. I think it's just such a bummer of a line in a scene, not only because it's corny, but because it really is supported by the, as I said, what I see as being the philosophical essentialism and objectivism that just runs through this movie and I think Snyder in general.
Yeah. To me, it's just much simpler, like on a purely story arc level. The plane is almost meaningless. Like that, like Victor resurrects the plane, much like they just resurrected Superman. The music soars and we're supposed to feel something because he like got a plane to fly. Like it totally falls flat. I mean, I see what they were attempting to do. It totally falls flat. And the plane really barely even factors into the final battle.
It just kind of drops him off, doesn't it?
Well, it drops him off, and then Batman blows a hole in the fortress and then takes out the tower, and then he immediately scuttles the plane. Like, it crashes. Like, he's looking at his watch or something, and he fucking flies into a building. Like, 100% pilot error. But it's like, yeah, okay, so, like, you resurrected this plane that you, like, it's Chekhov's plane. We mention it, like, way early right. in the first act. So you think it's going to factor, like, and so I guess it does sort of, like, maybe they couldn't have breached the fortress without the plane. But, like, also, Batman has, like, no end of fucking toys and...
But just call up Northrop Grumman. I'm sure exactly. he's got them on the line and be like, hey, I need your best plane. I have my own contracts with you. Give me a plane. I've got this... I've got a robot man in here with a soldering iron, and I'm worried that my... homeowner's insurance won't cover it if he blows everything yeah. up.
Like, give me a Huey gunship. Give yeah. me a MiG-17. Like anything. It doesn't have to be this plane. And then this plane, like I said, barely counts in the final fight because he crashes it almost immediately. Anyway, right. incredibly annoying and I hate it. And then we cut to back to the... What did you call it? Public domain?
Public domain Chernobyl?
Public domain Chernobyl. Yeah. And Steppenwolf is forming the Unity, which is kind of cool. We've been waiting for it. They've been setting it up for the entire movie. But I guess my question is this, and maybe we can talk about this more once Darkseid and Desaad make an appearance. But like, why is this like... middle manager guy, why is he trusted to create the Unity and all this stuff when, like, isn't this the time if you were Darkseid and you wanted to make an entrance and you wanted to enslave this world, is it now when you would show up?
I think, and I don't actually believe this, but this again is Comrade Snyder making a very pointed criticism about the managerial class.
Right.
This is what happens. You allow someone who is undertrained because you're just a real Peter Principle person yourself to do this, knowing that you are shielded from, in this case, the cosmic responsibility. in most cases, just the... kind of material or employment responsibility. So yeah, it's like, oh, I'll let him do it. If it goes well, I'll get a huge raise.
Yeah.
And if it goes poorly, I can be like, oof, he interviewed really well. Like, well, let's blame it on the people that referenced him from his last intergalactic terror corporation. So
it's incredible. It makes absolutely no sense. There's like, I've said this earlier on that the one thing that it's not J.J. Abrams. Who's the other guy?
Whedon.
Whedon, the Joss Whedon thing. The thing that he did right was he collapsed all three villains down into one.
Right.
That was the only thing that made sense. Having three layers of villainy really doesn't serve anybody in this movie. So if you had just had Darkseid come down, like this is the moment that he should have been there.
Oh, for exactly.
His moment of triumph.
Yeah, and it becomes painfully obvious that the reason that Steppenwolf is doing this is so that Darkseid doesn't have to get his hands dirty so he can come in the next movie. That so much yes. of this four-hour yes. movie is just a setup for another movie is... I won't want to say infuriating. There's other things to be infuriated about. But I've got a big heart for Fury. It's maddening to me. And we were kind of talking about this on a guest episode that may or may come out before this may not. What's fascinating to me is that these films have become kind of like merchandised in a way Not that this is supposed to sell you a bunch of Happy Meals or toys, but like the merchandise for these films is just the sequel. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like this has almost no value in itself. You don't watch it to be entertained. You don't watch it to gain insight into the human condition or whatever else. It's not a beautiful work of art. It exists to let you know that there's another one coming and you need to watch that. It's real. It's so crass. It becomes so obvious.
Yeah. It's assigned viewing. You're watching this because you have to, essentially. Yeah. And this really this movie in large part reads like a prequel.
Right.
Right. So like the sequel that has yet to come out is treated as though it already exists. And this is setting the table for that, at the expense of being entertained. Like, we don't get entertained. This is just a thing that we need to endure so that we can then endure the next thing.
Which is how Batman versus Superman was. And as we've talked about before, how, the studio shot down calling it Son of Son, Night of Night, Dawn of Dawn. And then it's like, well, Dawn's actually a lady. So it is like the Dawn of Dawn, but like Dawn's
Dawn of Dawn, yeah, Donald.
Dawn's as well.
It's about Trump's first term.
Yes, it's about Don Jr. waking up before noon for the first time in his life. It doesn't count when he's just on cocaine for 48 hours in a row. But yeah, so like Batman vs. Superman, they added on Dawn of Justice to let you know that this was setting up another movie, which is, we've talked about before, but it's funny in two ways. One, because the movie does such a poor job of that itself over its 3+ hours. And it slots in the same way that this movie slots in, as you're talking about with like just kind of mandatory viewing. There's no payoff in and of itself. And you can have both. You can absolutely have both. I think this is kind of the way like most people feel about the Star Wars movies. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but I, appreciate them as kind of just being a pop culture item. The best one, the second one from the original trilogy, leaves you with a cliffhanger. It leaves you as like, what's going to happen next? Did you hear that this is his dad? Oh my God. But that movie itself is enjoyable start to finish. Like anytime that's on TV, I will totally watch it. And so it does both. Things can absolutely do both where you leave it, oh, there's something more, to be found. It was also so funny about this, much like, Batman versus Superman, I didn't feel it was cliffhangery at all. It was just
no, it's the opposite.
Please, there will be more. You have to come back to the theater.
Yes, if anything, everything is resolved all too well.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, Superman's dead. I mean, I guess they get you with that cliffhanger because, the dirt is floating. But also what's funny about the dirt floating is it just, like, nothing else happened. He didn't come back. They had to resurrect him.
Yep.
So why was the dirt even floating? Just because he's there and he's an alien? I don't know. I don't care. Let's edit this part out.
So we cut back to the Batcave. We're going back and forth between Darkseid and the Justice League. We find out that Steppenwolf and the Justice League. We find out that Steppenwolf's fortress has a fatal flaw.
Who would have thought?
Absolutely incredible. If you attack it head on, you can just blast the shit out of it and get in and shoot out the tower that is creating the fortress. Because he didn't, he could have never anticipated a frontal assault.
Why?
So I know when I build my stronghold, I tend to leave like the front part just wide open because who's going to come through there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most armor is designed to just cover your back, right? Like that's yes.
A lot of people, famously, when you put on a bulletproof vest, your entire chest is exposed. Everything else is covered.
Yes. I mean, the first bulletproof vest, which is the design we still use today, the front is just where the Velcro goes. And, and it also has a red and white circular logo on it, akin to a bullseye. It's not a bullseye, just for the record. But the back, you know, you could be hit with armor-piercing shells and you'll still be fine.
Yeah, absolutely incredible.
And they also, they figure it out in 2 seconds. I mean, it becomes so obvious that the reason that he even built a fortress was that we would have to spend 30 minutes of them breaking into it. But, and it's not even interesting in the team building movie sense, right? Where like one of them isn't the person that knows how to, you know, break safes or whatever else. So there's not like, they're not going underground to get there. Their plan really is crash the car into the bank.
Yes.
and then just fight everyone until we can clear out the safe. And it's such a bummer because that's the fun part of these team building movies, which I guess this kind of is that you actually do something other than just have a side-scrolling, you know, video game beat-em-up scene for like 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. If, you know, if the Soderbergh, like the Ocean's 11, the Logan's Lucky, like the reason that those, to the extent that they are entertaining, and I actually really like Logan's Lucky. I like the Ocean's movies less, but to the extent that they're entertaining, it is all of that stuff. It's, you have the safe cracker and the pretty one and the cute one and the smart one. And everybody plays their role. And this one, yeah, it's literally Batman flies into the fucking thing and opens it up. And then he's immediately compromised. And the parademons rip the lid off of his Batmobile. And they're about to kill him, except for we get a Deus Ex Machina Wonder Woman appearance and saves him.
Right.
But that hasn't happened yet. We just get sick dialogue like, we've got to destroy the defensive dome before the boxes sink and create the unity. Just pure exposition and horrible dialogue.
Yeah, we know that that's what's happening.
Yeah, you don't need to say it for the sixth time.
I need to eat lunch because I'm hungry. my body needs calories, right?
Right. Like,
when I go water my plants in the morning, I don't say to no. I don't just open my window and be like, sunlight and water is their food. If I don't do this, they will. And people are just like, well, shut up.
That fucking guy again.
Yeah.
Then we do get another tonal shift. I don't know. I was pretty much having an out-of-body experience at this point, though, when I was rewatching it last night. We cut to Clark in the Fortress of Solitude. And we get the Russell Crowe voiceover from, I assume, one of the earlier movies, because we don't see Russell Crowe. I don't know if he gets residuals from any of this. But we get the dulcet tones of the 30-odd foot of grunts singer Russell Crowe talking about Kal-El and his mission. And he says, fly, son. It's time.
This part had no... did nothing for me.
Well, it is the introduction of the black suit, so you had to have it. It couldn't not be in there. He goes into the, I don't know, into some secret compartment and pulls out the black suit, and you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, shit.
He talks
the black suit.
He talks to his Kryptonian sales associate, who's like, we have some really great stuff coming in. No one else has seen it yet, but I think I can show it to you. I would have been there for that scene where he's at like the local fashion mall and the guy's like, all right, I'm not supposed to do this. And you know, he says that to everybody anyway.
Yes.
Batman comes out in the black suit and just like Fendi pumps.
Then we're back at the Batcave. That fake High on Fire riff happens again as everyone preps for battle. Did you notice it this time?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think it's at a frequency that I can't hear.
Only dogs and old men can hear it.
Also, I think when I watch this movie, it could be my tinnitus, but I just hear the song Fond Affections by This Mortal Coil, like playing over the entire thing.
So everybody does prep for battle, and then they pile on the miracle plane. And he, Bruce flies them to Russia, and then he like bosses them around. It's kind of a weird shift. He's like, that go, you guys go do it, go over here, and this is why I brought you together. Like, he gets a little bossy, and it's kind of a weird vibe from him.
My question is, when they're flying over there, right, since Cyborg has fixed the ship, because he and the ship talked, right, and the ship was like, slid him a note that said, do you like me, circle 0 or 1. Why is he not continuing to talk to the ship? Why is he such a jerk about it? Where he's like, well, you're back to your purpose, you know, grunt ship. Now we're just going to be in you and fly. Like, the ship, maybe the ship wants to talk to them. Ship's like, hey guys, what are we doing? Like, and is the ship just like pinging him in his robot brain and he's just like leaving the ship on red? Like, what's going on?
100%. Yeah. He's ghosting the ship as he's on the ship.
Ship's like, you're kind of riding the clutch a little bit. And he's just like, enough of you.
Yeah. So then Bruce blasts his way into the fortress. The fortress falls. He crashes the plane. And then he has to eject and drive the Batmobile. And then it's like literally 20 minutes of cutscene video game shit.
Yes. So I forget exactly when it happens, but... yeah, he's doing cool skids, and then he just destroys everything, and he ends up behind one of the guns, the guns that they have guarding the fortress. So you make these weird goopy alien guns, but you don't build the fortress such that it's safe from a frontal attack. So sure, why not? Batman gets behind one of these guns, and then it's just it is a video game. It looks like that Terminator 2 video game where your controller was like a machine gun.
Oh hell yes. And granted, there were a bunch of those.
Yes. I mean, that game ruled, but watching someone play that game was not terribly exciting. Playing that game was super exciting. There was also that game, and I am absolutely shoehorning this in simply because I want to talk about it. The Aerosmith video game. Go!
Way to go!
I remember that!
You just shot CDs at people because it was in a dystopic future when music/Aerosmith was illegal.
Oh my God. Can you imagine how soul-crushing it would be to live in a world without Aerosmith?
Oh, no, you know that, like, you know, the meme of the, like, idyllic, like, future planet buildings?
That's the world if Aerosmith didn't exist?
I mean...
if Honkin' on Bobo had never been released,
my
that's the utopia we'd be living in right now.
I was going to say, because I can definitely get behind Mama Kin, but... Oof, Honkin' on Bobo is
no,
so rough.
Post sobriety Aerosmith is just brutal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah, it looks like a video game, and it goes on forever. I don't know what...
forever.
It's just, yeah, he's behind the gun. He's going to shoot them as they fly into him. As he shoots the 10th one, I was never like, oh, is this the one that gets him?
Right.
Is this the one that gets him? It's like, no, of course.
Here's what's weird about the Parademons is they are both the Keystone Cops and like the CIA and like Jason Statham. They're both
right.
Completely impotent, and they're all powerful. Like, you can just, you know, slice through them like they were butter. But then when the two Parademons are on the Batmobile and the carapace of the Batmobile has been ripped off, Batman's like, oh, fuck, I'm about to meet my maker. And then that's when Wonder Woman shows up and cleaves them both in half. But it's this weird thing where they're like all powerful and not at all powerful at the same time.
Yeah, they're absolutely like bumping into each other. And yeah, it's as needed for the plot, right? It's like when they just need to be grist and they're just getting dusted for 10 minutes, they can absolutely do that. And then when they need to... whether, yeah, it's destroying the Wonder Women or it's actually doing something effectual in this fight scene, there's just like a switch that's flipped somewhere in the script and they're useful again.
Oh, that's it. There's your problem right here. You had it set to evil.
You had it set to useless. Like,
It's really bad and dumb. Okay, in my eternal quest, my continuing quest to find cool stuff, I did think there was something cool about where Batman peels out of the wreckage of the plane in the Batmobile, and he's firing machine guns into the oncoming horde of parademons. And Zach does like the speed ramping thing where the shell casings are hitting the ground in right. like slow motion. Kind of looked all right.
You're being more generous than I. And again, I'm like, I thought that was cool in the RoboCop video game. Like that is such, that probably, and I don't even know if it was intentionally a nod or if it's just like the people working on this are late 30 somethings who grew up with like, you know, really violent video games and other media where like, that's always cool. Like the steaming bullet casings flying out is just always cool. And when I saw it this time, I was like, really? This, like, yeah, when I was 9, this was the coolest thing imaginable to me. But so, I mean, yeah, you are.
I'm really reaching here, but
you're being charitable.
I am. But yeah, most of the chase absolutely looks like dog shit. It's like happening in the pitch black. You can't see anything. There's one especially absurd thing where Aquaman's flying through the air as though he can fly, but we know he can't because at one point he's falling, but he doesn't seem concerned about it, but he's like killed the parademon and he's falling. And then Cyborg swoops in and saves him. And he's like, thanks buddy or something.
Positive. He says, my man.
That's what he says. Yeah, exactly. He says, my man. And then Aquaman is like slicing through the air at another time and stabs a parademon with his trident. And then he rides.
He surfs it.
He surfs the fucking parademon corpse to the ground.
So I.
Hilarious.
Actually thought that. I mean, so what's really funny about all this stuff, all the Aquaman stuff. I mean, my initial thought was like, one, I was like, oh, can he fly? I was like, no, he can't fly. He's just...
For sure. I wondered the same thing.
He's just one of those guys that wears, you know, squirrel suits and does like base jumping because he's, you know, totally extreme. And then, yeah, the line, the my man is so funny because, again, like every other relationship here, nothing's been developed. Like... He went from accusing Cyborg of being one of the bad guys to now Cyborg like grabs him and gives him another toss. And he's just like, yeah, bro. Also hilariously, I found an article that lists Aquaman's like 7 best lines from Justice League that you can use in everyday conversation that now after reading like the third time, I'm pretty sure is a joke.
Okay.
It's like a parody article, but the first one is my man.
Oh,
one of them, and this is what has me pretty sure that it's a joke. One of the other of his 7 best lines from Justice League is just, yeah.
I mean, in the writer's defense, you can use that in everyday. I often find occasion to use the word yeah.
As I just did, and I was quoting Aquaman there. But yeah, my thought was, I wasn't quoting him when I said it just there. That was my own. Is what, what can he do here other than be really strong? Does he make the toilets overflow? What is his power when he's out of the sea?
It makes no sense. He does do a thing later where he jams his trident into the ground and there's like a wave that happens.
I think we talked about this before. I think, and maybe please, if someone knows Aquaman super well, you know, call us and explain it to us. Assume that we know nothing and are, you know, mentally deficient. Yeah, we think he can pull the moisture out of the air and make a little wave, which is, in addition to being strong and kind of gliding well, I mean, when he's in the air, and this I will totally just wave as being part of,
sure, it's fine.
Superhero stuff. Yeah, he's not just like plummeting to the earth. He is kind of gliding. Yeah, he doesn't. He's really strong. It's helpful to have someone that's like really strong and apparently is a fearless fighter on land. I'll give him that.
But that's all of these people, with the exception of the Flash, I guess. They're all super strong, especially Wonder Woman.
Right. I mean, the Flash is just fast.
Yeah. Really fucking dumb. Superman does show up, though. He shows up at Wayne Manor, and there's a tender moment between him and Alfred. But then Alfred, like, immediately negs him. He's like, well, let's hope you're not too late. He's doing that shitty devil's advocate thing again.
Yeah, he just only exists to be a bummer.
He's a fucking bummer.
Thing. So, yeah, it's just, you know.
I'm cutting toxic people out of my life, and that starts with Alfred.
Yes. I don't have time for these relationships anymore.
No. No, he just brings me down. So Aquaman and Cyborg get the drop on Steppenwolf. This is where the water power trident thing happens. Then Wonder Woman shows up. Gal Gadot is just so awful. She's just always crinkling up her face. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
yes.
What passes for acting for her is like her looking at something off screen, which is nothing, looking like at a green screen and like crinkling her beautiful face.
It's her serious face.
I hate it so much. It's so bad.
It looks like some, you know. Yeah, it looks like she just like smelled a fart. Like that's always. Yeah.
I've heard this referred to on multiple occasions as smell the fart acting.
Yeah. And what's funny is I'm trying to think if part of it is just terrible direction. Like, I don't think she's a good actor, right?
And she's not. I'm here to tell you.
But I wonder.
Hot take.
I wonder if in the Fast and the Furious movies, if she was this bad. Because also, not a whole lot to work with in those films. And she was in two of them, if I'm not mistaken. Huh. Maybe just one.
I never knew that.
Yeah. That's how. I think that was kind of like her foray into acting. And I don't remember her being as bad. So what I'm saying is I think part of the responsibility is that Zack Snyder is a terrible director.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Aquaman, Cyborg, Wonder Woman are all trying to distract Steppenwolf while Victor jacks into the Unity, right? That's what's happening?
Yes.
They distract him for a while, and then Barry is Barry's running around trying to create the charge that Victor needs to get into the Unity and break up the mother boxes, and that's all what's going down now.
Right, yeah. So we've kind of been hopping around because on the one hand, this scene goes on forever, and also none of it really matters. Like, none of it's ultimately that important. Batman is shooting parademons. They're all kind of fighting. Aquaman's flying through the air saying, my man, saying yeah at least once. And Cyborg, yeah, he much like they needed a big charge to bring Superman back to life, they need a big charge for him to separate the Unity, which, and this is me nitpicking, but if Cyborg is all powerful, if he can control the world's nukes, which for some reason really sticks in my craw and I keep harping on, but if he can do all of this, why can't he make the big charge? And I know the answer is because they need a reason for Flash to exist, because just being super fast in this setting isn't helpful enough. But also, as you described, isn't he just like an X-Acto knife of a person then? Can't he just also fight? Why does he have to just be on the hamster wheel because they need this big charge? And I feel like all of it is in service of itself, but in the most flimsy way that when you think about it for a second, it just all collapses.
Well, here's the thing. I had never thought about it, but that is an excellent point. So Flash already has an excuse to exist. And that's because in a few minutes, he's going to need to reverse the flow of time.
Right.
And so they could have completely gone with Victor trying to create his own charge, right? And it can take him however long it needs to take for him to create the charge, to extract, harvest the radiation, if you want, out of the air and create the charge, right? But no, he has to sit there and wait while Barry goes around and around and around. And then Victor almost does it. And then he gets attacked by Steppenwolf. And then he almost does it again. But then Barry can't do it in time. Like, if you just had Victor being the guy who is going to have Barry fighting and have Victor being the guy who's going to take the boxes apart, you could have absolutely come up with a different reason why the initial attempt failed and that they have to reverse time. Instead, it's just like tortured, and we see Barry running around three different times super fast in this
round
film.
Round and round.
What comes around goes around. Just give it time.
Yeah. And him running, I mean, you had mentioned this, but him just running around in his slow motion is
lightning.
Boring to watch.
And it looks so fucking goofy. Okay, when he finally does have to run super duper fast, faster than the speed of light, is when it looks like a really bad side-scrolling video game.
He looks like Quap. If anyone's ever played the game Quap, that's what he... It looks like he's not... It looks like his forearms, his biceps, his quads, you know, his lower legs, none of them are in sync with each other. He's like,
yes, yes,
flopping his hands in a weird way. It's like you couldn't have brought Usain Bolt in to consult for like 2 minutes and said, here's what running fast looks like.
The thing for me is that the way the foot contacts the ground, it's like he's skating backwards somehow, but he's moving forwards. It just looks terrible.
Also, that he's supposed to be running this fast, and one of the parademons was able to clip him.
Well, I see. I'm willing to suspend my disbelief for that, because he's going so fast that if you just shot something into his path, there's a pretty good chance he would run into it, right? Because he's going so fast. I don't know. That's what I thought.
It's just he is. He's the spokes, and the parademon is the frame pump thrown by a Frenchman, is what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. Although, you would think that, well, maybe he's going too fast, but Barry could typically have avoided that. He could have seen the bullet, the pink blob coming, and avoided it.
Yeah.
Which he also didn't do.
Yeah, it looks, and it makes it, because right, he's like running, and he's like, I can't sustain this. And then he's got to run again, and then it gets shot, and then he's got a little injury. And then...
It's the exact same thing that happens when he gets too horny and falls.
Yes.
From earlier.
And my thought, too, at this point, I was just like, just get it over with. I know he's going to do this. This is not suspenseful. Nope. I'm not on the edge of my seat. Like, will this happen or not happen? But just stop starting it stopping it and starting it again. Just make him run and do the thing.
Yep.
And also, this is just my memory being foggy. After the parademon shoots him, does the parademon just go like, well, I shot him. Time to go away now.
Where's Otis? He's not in his cell.
I shot him.
Well, that's... What?
Now I'm going down to Emmett's Fix-It Shop.
The parademon flipped the smart switch on. He's like, all right, I'm going to clip this guy. I'm going to go full... Who was the American Sniper dude?
Chris Kyle? Yeah, Chris right? Kyle. Yeah.
If he's gone full Chris Kyle, he's got a Punisher logo on his parademon suit. He's holding a very... very obviously he's holding a Cabbage Patch Kid when he goes home afterwards. Like, why doesn't afterwards he go and finish off the Flash? He can fly. He's just like, well, I shot him.
My work here is done. I'm taking the rest of the day off. Good work.
we're being overly harsh on a lot of this, but if you think about most of just how the action hangs together in this film, if you think about it for 2 seconds, it all collapses under its own weight. And that's part of what's so frustrating, because this film ultimately offers you nothing other than the action. So if that isn't compelling, or it doesn't feel real, even in like a superhero context, you are ultimately left with just nothing at all.
You got jack shit. Yeah.
Yep.
This is the point at which Superman shows up. Victor is about to do the Unity thing, and Steppenwolf has him in his sights, takes forever, does the big wind up, and then when he finally swings the giant space axe, Superman is standing there in the black suit and catches the blade in the shoulder, and like nothing happens. Like he just does it. He just stops it. And Superman says, not impressed.
Which again is just all of this dialogue. I think I mentioned it before, is what someone imagines they would say if they got in a fight.
It's epic clapback lines.
Yeah. Just some dork who sits around imagining what he would say if like he caught a punch. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's so dorky. And yeah, not, I mean, I don't know what else you would have him say that would be cool. Just, you know, nothing.
Get to the chopper.
Yeah. You just have Superman yell, it's not a tumor. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is the best you can do, but
yeah,
every single time it's just, I'm like, oh, come on.
I feel like we could have sent this out for punch-ups. Somebody would have come back with something good.
Yeah, or make it way punnier. Have him go, now you're axing for it, right? Like,
motherfuck.
Just like really like leaning into that.
Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah.
So Superman freezes the axe, smashes it, and then kicks Steppenwolf a mile down a hallway, kind of cool, into it.
Yeah.
And then he just absolutely dismantles him. He's alternates blasting him with the laser eyes and punching him, and he like rips his fucking Cadillac grill armor off, mm-hmm. and he's just, he's a bent and broke. He breaks off one of his horns. He's all fucked up by this point. But I do want to point out that at this juncture, when Superman shows up, Wonder Woman says sort of like under her breath and to nobody, Kal-El. Like, yeah, you resurrected him for the express purpose of him helping you in the final fight, and you had hoped he was going to show up. So why are you surprised?
Yeah, it's, and I think it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it kind of seems like it's to let the audience know that he's back, baby. But we already know that, right?
We can see that. He's literally standing on the screen. He's on the
Although
screen.
Although it would be hilarious if he took care of Steppenwolf and then just went piece by piece and just killed everybody in the Justice
Hell
League.
Hell yes. That
right?
would rule.
He's just like, yeah, no, I'm back here because I wasn't done murdering you guys at that moment. He's like, I'm going to murder all of you guys. Then I'm going to dust off those cops and those National Guard folks listening to Three Doors Down. Then I'm destroying that monument. I'm not done yet.
The only reason I fought Steppenwolf is because I wanted to kill you myself.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, he's not stealing my thunder here. Yeah, she says Kal-El, and it's, you know, very hushed and reverent. It's silly. I mean, really, the point of that was another reason to do a close-up on her face, which,
yeah, okay, I'm with it.
Yeah, makes total sense.
I'm not complaining. Okay, so the Unity has begun to synchronize. They delayed the Parademon shooting Barry, made them not be able to create the charge. And
your iPhone is updating at this point. You can't
your iPhone
send
is
that text.
Too hot to use it. You need to wait for it to cool off. So there's now a portal. I don't know what the fuck is going on here, because is the Unity the thing that made Darkseid and Desaad, like, did that open up the portal between the two dimensions? Or is that just coincidental?
I think it's coincidental. In the movie, it reads
causal. Like,
yeah, that is what's happening. But it's also, that doesn't make any sense because they're constantly going to planets.
Right.
And they didn't have the mother boxes before, so they weren't doing, do you do the Unity? I don't know if you do the Unity.
Right.
They weren't causing the Unity before. So my thought is that they should also, how is Steppenwolf there, right? Like, it's...
Mm-hmm. He portals all over the damn place.
Yeah. So my thought is they can just show up there anytime they want, but it does seem, like I said, as you're watching it, it really feels like the reason they're about to step on through is because of the Unity.
Yeah, maybe they had an alarm set for when the Unity goes off, ping me and I'll come through. So the unity is synchronizing, and it's too late. They were not able to create the charge, and Victor could not break up the thing. And so Barry has to reverse time. So that's when he starts running, and then he has his little soliloquy to his absent father, in which he says, "Dad, I want you to know your kid was one of them, one of the best of the best." And this is all said very earnestly while he's running and reversing the course of time. And it looks so, 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 so bad.
And Ezra Miller, or whatever, as we've said, I think he does as much as he possibly can with this, probably the most enjoyable part of the film. And the general conceit of this, right? Kid whose dad is in prison, you know, what we assume wrongfully imprisoned for the murder of his mom, you know, so he's got like a pretty pitiable existence. And so, like, I want there to be some, you know, kind of pathos to this. I want this to be sympathetic, but it is just cornball. The reason that the radiation crop was so low this year is because an invasive corn species has taken over.
It's that Roundup Ready shit.
Yeah. It's just, there's this Monsanto corn that will kill us all. And it's just so, I mean, the other funny part is like one of the best of the best. Like, one, your friends are like barely successful in what they're doing, and you just got shot. Like, if you guys are the best of the best, then we are woof. We are boned. We are boned.
Yeah, that rules. And then he proceeds to say, "Make your own future, make your own past. It's all right now." What the fuck?
Make your own salad, make your own Sunday. I don't know. Yeah, just epic lines for preteens, right?
Yeah,
that's what this script is. Make your own past, huh? I mean, I guess you did.
Yeah,
by definition of the way time works.
And if you just forget all the bad shit you did, and you only remember the good stuff, and you sort of like gaslight yourself, I guess you can make your own past that way.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Anyway, time is now flowing in reverse, and this is actually pretty, it looks cool because we see Superman sort of getting de-Thanosed, like, and then Victor, like, they are reforming. So you see like bone and then tissue and then skin and then costume, like going back onto Superman's body. And the same thing happens with Victor. And he is able to get inside the Unity, and shit is all fucked up inside there. He encounters his family, but clearly no, they're not really his family. They are the three crones from the initial attack on Earth. And they're pretending to be him and his dad and his mom, saying, "Stay with us, Danny. We'll play with you forever." Yeah. But he, he says, "I'm not alone. I'm not broken, and I'm not alone," is what he says. So his hero's journey is complete.
And yeah, I mean, you absolutely nailed everything that was happening. I can't recall a particular song, but what him saying, "I'm not broken and I'm not alone," just reminds me of every Three Doors Down or Trapped song.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Whatever else I had to listen to when I was working at Guitar Center, just that kind of, you know, early 2000s butt rock. And that's what it reminded me of. Just like, "I'm not alone." Yeah. Just some Godsmack song. "Stay away from me, mother box." Yeah. And and it's just, and again, you knew what was going to happen, right? Yeah. He's in heaven and they're like, you know, "Join us in death." And at this point I was just like,
yes, please.
If he won't, I will. So, like, you're not going to eat that. I'll have it. And so he said, I guess these are his friends now, right? The Justice League, these are the people he's with.
Yep.
And yes, and that's too confusing to me, but I guess I'll just like give it a pass because it fits or whatever. Like, that's how you can defeat the Unity. You can go in and be like, I don't want to die. Like, to me, I'm Is it both of those things? Like, so he's able to even do this because the Flash has turned back time.
Right.
So the turning back of the time doesn't have anything to do with this. Now they're just back at the point at which he can undo the Unity. But to undo the Unity, he has to go in there and not be tricked by, the old crones. And then he and Superman rip it apart, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So I guess we assume that Superman creates the charge that Barry had been, did Barry create the charge by running so fast that time went in reverse?
I think when he runs that fast, it's like the levels of doing it is like runs really fast, creates a charge, run really fast and creates a charge and turns back time.
Hell yeah.
And then who knows what the other version is.
Yeah, but Superman has to be there. And so together, they are able to do the thing that they are not able to do alone. And the portal, the dimensional rift closes, and Darkseid and Desaad are marooned wherever, back on Apocalypse.
Well, so before that, though, this is... or is it before that or not? But yeah, so they kill... Steppenwolf, right? They punt his head into the portal.
Right. Superman does that. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Wait, that's, okay. What happens is Superman spears Steppenwolf. No, Aquaman's tridents him. Superman punches him. Then Wonder Woman tosses him through the rift.
Yeah. As he's being tossed through, she cuts his head off.
Yes.
And so I think his head, maybe both his head and his body land in the other dimension, but at least his head does.
Yeah.
Because Darkseid stands on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lights in his eyes go out, which I felt like this scene was unspeakably crummy.
Oh, it looked like shit, dude.
There's no oomph to him dying.
Like, nope.
I will grant it. It was kind of cool, and they made it. You kind of understood why they. You know, it's like this is what happens when we work together.
Yeah,
we can cut this guy's head off, and teamwork makes the decapitation work. And like, I get that aspect of it, but there's just no big payoff to murdering the main antagonist of the film.
Correct,
and I think mostly because it's like. One, this space blob, right, never had any, like, real purpose. A lot of people said, like, oh, you understand what his motivations are now. That actually never really landed to me, like, just that
not
he's...
Not at all.
You know, like I said, just because he's on the performance plan, I'm like, sure. I really think that serves more to just set up the sequel than it does to provide motivations for him. And he never looked real... That he's like undone in a matter of moments after being like relatively invincible for most of the movie. And then, and he's so lifeless. Like someone being decapitated is a very visceral and gruesome thing. And it is really just like, whoop, we separated these two pixels and now one pixel is under this guy's foot. And a close up of his very silly CGI scowl as it's the lights going out in his eyes looks like the light going out when you unplug your router because you need to reset your internet. And it sucks.
And I think that's part of the problem with these huge mega blockbusters is that they can't be rated R. They have to be PG. And so
this movie was rated R.
Wait, no, was it?
Yes, this movie is absolutely rated R.
Oh my God, I never even realized that. Obviously, I didn't see it in a theater, but like, why can't you show some violence then? Some graphic violence? There was no graphic violence in this entire thing.
Before I get that, high-pitched about it, I should confirm, but I'm like nearly positive that this movie has an R rating.
It is rated R. It's
absolutely rated R. Yeah. I you heard it here first. I was right. what's funny is it probably gets to two R ratings because of like the two times they say fuck. And And also, you know, my other thought on this was, you know, you're constantly using lightning and explosions and all this other stuff. Just make them blow up. Do something that does seem big and exciting. You know, you can still all power together. Like Superman can zap Wonder Woman's gauntlets, and then she can redirect that, and Aquaman can make him slip. Aquaman can make a puddle that he slips on, so he's prone. So he's prone, and then he gets zapped by, you know, their ultimate powers. But yeah, do something that's more fitting to a character that's, you know, as we keep saying, a CGI blob.
It sucks ass. It was so underwhelming. Yeah, we fought him now at least three times, and every time sucked, and especially this one. Then we cut to like Desaad and Darkseid back on Apocalypse, and Desaad says, "I told you Steppenwolf would fail," and Darkseid's like, "Yeah, I guess I'll have to go and do it myself in the next movie." Essentially, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, and as we've talked about, I mean, so much of this, it's becoming. If one thing becomes more obvious upon repeated viewings, it's that this really is just the setup to another movie, which, as we've discussed, there was already one that did that for this, and just on and on until infinity. And yeah, and my kind of thought was like, so then what was the point of all this? And if this was so important, why didn't you send in the A-team? Why did you send in, you know, this dork? And in this way, it really makes it feel kind of in both senses. One, you know, everything's predetermined. There's, like I said, there's never ever any real tension, never any real suspense. You know, everything is going to slot in where it needs to. And then these things don't seem to have any consequence. It's like, well, that didn't work, but now we'll do the next one that will. And so it really feels like nothing matters. Everything's predetermined. And for me, that is one of the like most just like groan inducing and depressing parts about this movie. And as we talked about, you know, early on, I keep finding these kind of parallels to our own contemporary experience. And this is one of the really strong ones for me, because it's like, this is a superhero movie. You should be able to do whatever you want, make it as fantastical, do some world building, have this like internally consistent, but like just zany stuff. And the Justice League, my kind of note on it was like, they aren't reimagining the future. They're just voting every 4 years, right? And much like our own experience, they're not like changing anything. They're just like, well, we got rid of the really bad guy.
Right. But we got rid of the moderately.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like not okay guy.
Like we got rid of the guy that everyone hates, but we're actually not doing anything to improve things. Right. And another thing that's really interesting about this scene is like, they save the world, sure, but there's no people. There's no one cheering, right? There's none of those shots of like people coming out under the rubble and being like, oh, thank you. It's just like, we saved it for ourselves. And yeah, it's just like, they're not really offering anything better. They just like come along at the last possible second and just be like, oh, not him, us.
Right.
And to me, like I said, this is very highfalutin, but like it reminds me of electoral politics. Like, I can't help but draw that parallel of, you know, people kind of dropping in and being like, pay a lot of attention to me, but we're not going to do anything meaningful along the way other than I am better than the alternative.
Right.
You have to be happy with that.
You have to be happy with that. And we will do the bare minimum. We will stave off absolute decimation for now. We can talk again in before the midterms, but
right.
Right now, exactly. We're only going to repel Steppenwolf. We're not going to do anything about climate change.
Yeah. And that, like, and I know that, you know, this movie is barely grounded in the world. You know, it's not like the Justice League are taking on poverty or anything.
Except for Cyborg and that one person.
Yeah, that's true. But even then, on a very individual level. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, for me, and maybe it's just, you know, having lived through not just the year we've lived through, but like, you know, the era that we kind of continue to live through. And as we've talked about before, you know, personally trying and feeling like I have failed to enact change in the way that I can as a person, you know, within the broader American, you know, kind of political apparatus. Watching this to me is just like, ugh, for something that's supposed to have a lot of, or is allowed to have a lot of imagination. I'm not saying this movie was supposed to, but like can, and this can be a space where you can have a lot of imagination. I was like, this really, the way this feels grounded in the world is in just the absolute defeatism that the heroes are presented. It's like, you don't actually ever move the needle on the big issues. You just kick the can down the road forever.
Yep. And so in lieu of the cheering people emerging from the rubble, we get the camera literally focused on the six superheroes. They're looking over the city, and the plane somehow is flying again, and the plane is taxiing, not taxiing, but it's like hovering in midair, ready to pick them up, and they all hop on board. There's soaring music, there's a slow circular pan, as there so often is, and I felt absolutely nothing at this point.
No, and by this point, too, I had such visual fatigue of everything just being a blasted CGI landscape. Because that was an interesting part, too. And I think this is just Snyder's fascination with like dark and menacing visuals and narratives. But it's not like they, you know, they got rid of the unity and this land turned like green again, which I get is, you know, that's like maybe not what would happen. But also, why not? Why not? And I think, that, you know, what I was saying before, you know, about my, you know, the Justice League or just this, you know, ineffectual super PAC, right? Who, you know, not nominate some centrist every 4 years.
Jesus Christ.
Is it like, why can't you imagine something that is more interesting? Why, when the structurally unsound fortress falls, why doesn't this land turn green? Why does it just go back to, well, guess what? You're still living in a, you know, a radiation hazard zone, but there's no demon there anymore. And, right. And like that stuff for me, it's like harp on this point, like literally made the flower in my lapel wilt, you know, as I was watching this. Cause I was just like, oh, why would you watch a superhero movie that hews so closely to our own existence? Yeah. Like, this, come on, Zach, like, just make the sun come out at least. Yeah. God.
I will say, I do not mean to say this to defend Zack Snyder, but I mean to indict superhero movies in general with this. It's that the interminable final battle in these movies that goes on for 18 to 25 minutes usually, I always just feel wrung out at the end. It's like after like 5 to 8 minutes of that, I have reached saturation and I can process no more visual information. And the first time I remember this happening was Avengers Age of Ultron. There's like, they're fighting, they might as well be parademons. They're these shitty robots.
Totally.
They're fighting them for 20 fucking minutes. And like 5 minutes in, I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, how much longer is this going to go on? And then went on for 300% longer. And so it's the exact same, that's the exact same dynamic at work here. It's CGI blobs fighting CGI blobs. And I was just exhausted after just a few minutes. It just doesn't, like, I don't know, maybe younger people process this information differently. Maybe people brought up on video games can process this. As an old person who like was alive when Pong came out, I can't do it. It just like washes over me and I am unchanged.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, there's the visual fatigue aspect of it for me as well. And it's akin to listening to like a death metal album with like no real dynamics for an hour. Right.
Yep.
And you know, I had several Nile CDs that were staples in the car where I would deliver pizza, you know,
right.
I'm willing to out myself. And, but if I was just like going for a drive in that same car, I was never like, oh, I'm going to put on this Nile CD and listen to it for 45 minutes. Cause my brain just turns off at one point. And that's like visually how things are. And as you said, again, I think very generously, talked about the moments where there are tonal shifts, there's kind of visual shifts, but they're very short and they usually are like, you know, literally involve a butterfly landing on someone to signify that, you know, better times are ahead. And that's like kind of my thing too much. Just let the sun come out. Mm-hmm. Let there be like, will there ever be a rainbow? The answer is no. And I think as we find is in the epilogue that, you know, Zach, things are just going to keep getting more grim. Strap in for more grimness.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've said everything that I can say. I do think it was funny though. I did notice the final panning shot, how attractive everybody is. Like even like, I don't know, is Affleck the least handsome guy, which is really, the bar is very high. Everybody is beautiful. I thought it'd be hilarious if you just had one ugly Justice League person, like cast Steve Buscemi in there. Give me Ernest Borgnine. So just give me one person to just throw off the entire visual balance of the thing.
Yeah, they are. Well, what's funny for me too is like, right, I'm sure these are all good looking folks, but they barely look like people because they are touched up. Right, everyone is so photoshopped into oblivion and so touched up that I didn't even process that at the time. And I think mm-hmm. you're correct, right? They're all very good-looking folks, even
insanely beautiful. Yeah,
you know, Cyborg has like a metal plate on half his face, but you know, and he's a good-looking guy. But yeah, I don't even like register them as people. They're all, you know, mining the depths of the uncanny valley just because they've, you know, been maybe part of that is like, if you just had them against this backdrop and they weren't touched up into oblivion, they would look insane, right? It would stand out so much because Snyder loves that. Like the guys in 300 with their CGI abs and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff, they didn't look like actual people. And it kind of works in that movie. Because, like, you know, the whole thing's just, albeit in a historical, but in a fantastical comic book setting. Whereas in this, it goes back and forth. Because, like, they do have to do things like buy coffee and, right. you know, just drive sports cars around. And then, but yeah, I think to make them even seem like they sort of fit in this, yeah, public domain Chernobyl, which is all just blasted CGI, they have to also be, you know, computer rendered. Gorgeous models.
Yeah. Just give me a Buscemi in one of these things. I swear to God, I'll make it worth your while. All right. That's part six. Only the epilogue is left. Nat, we are almost at the end of this adventure that we've embarked on.
I mean, I am at the point where I'm like becoming addicted to rehab in, like through this process.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, I've heard that's a thing.
Wow. All right. I mean, yeah. I believe you. I'm not doubting you. God, you don't have to get so defensive.
I mean,
we've probably talked about this movie now. This is part 13. We've probably talked about it for at least 18 hours.
When I think about it that way, I mean, my response to like inner monologue response to that is like the Mr. Show sketch where the guy realizes that he got married to the guy he was getting in a fight with at the bar, and they just yelled chicken shit at each other. And then the guy dies and he just goes, my life. Like that's, but you know, there's still a pandemic going on. It's, you know, I can't do my favorite things right now, which are, licking doorknobs and drinking directly out of cupping my hands in the sewer and drinking the fresh water. So yeah, I mean, this is, was this the best way to spend 18 and what may creep up to slightly over 20 hours?
Probably not.
No. But was it the worst?
Probably. No, I'll maybe not.
I mean, this is like somewhere it's, you know, it's better than being a murderer, but maybe slightly worse than being like the Nexium cult guy.
Fuck, man, that's bringing back some flashbacks from earlier on in the pandemic.
Oh, I was like, were you in the next scene?
I was like, actually, yeah. I've never showed you my brand.
No, I mean, I just thought that was like a really blown out tattoo. That,
yeah. You know. No, Keith wanted me to have it.
Oh, was that that guy's name?
Keith Raniere, yeah.
Oh, I watched that. In the way I watch anything is just like in one chug. And I watched that as like fast as I possibly could. And my main takeaway from that was two things. One, and it's the same as whenever I watch something about, like whenever I watch the Fire Island stuff or any of these kind of...
Wait, Fire Festival?
Yeah, Fire Festival.
Uh-huh.
The Fire Island was a different thing I was watching.
Different thing.
And, like my initial takeaway is just like, I should scam very rich people. Like that's always my first response. And fortunately, my level of organization and motivation only takes me to podcast. Like I can't go past that. I don't have the gumption. But so yeah, my two takeaways from the Nexium thing were I should scam the very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the second was that guy was always wearing knee pads. Like I know he wasn't always wearing knee pads, but in my mind, that guy was always wearing knee pads.
I was going to say the only thing that I learned from that is if your cult is based around midnight volleyball, run in the other direction really fast.
Just, I mean, if some guy was coming up to me and being like, you know, you probably have a lot of problems in your life, huh? You want to talk to me about that? I'd be like, you're wearing knee pads. Like what can you possibly tell me? You have knee pads. Like just don't dive down on your knees. Also, why are you going to your knees? You're like 4'11". Just like hit the ball, like bend down a little. All right. We've watch for our Justice League cult to pop up soon.
Well, at least we found our next podcast subject. We're going to
knee talk. Pads,
midnight volleyball, the podcast.
Midnight volleyball should be, about midnight cow. We'll review Midnight Cowboy and then also talk about the Nexium cult and try to find parallels between those two disparate pieces of media.
I'm into it. All right, folks, we've got maybe one more of these left unless we stretch the epilogue episodes into multiple episodes, but I don't think my sanity can handle it. So you're almost at the end of this thing.
If we do, just have an intervention with us. Like I said, I'm now kind of like full Stockholm syndrome with this where I'm like, oh, but Mike, you know, Zack Snyder is a captor. He gives me water and a blanket. Like, so I need to be saved from myself. Absolutely.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Tell a friend about the show. Leave us a voice memo if you want. And have a great day. There's a war coming down between my breasts and mine. I don't want no war going down.
unity as one, stand together, unity, evolution.